Hello, everyone. We are your hosts, Susan and Jill. We are longtime educators who are here to share with you all things education. We want to inspire you, help you innovate, dream new visions, and best of all, make you laugh. The education field is not an easy one, but we do it because we love kids and we want the very best for them. Join us as we laugh, learn, and get schooled with Kale Education and Company.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Get Schooled with Kale Education and Company. We have a friend here with us today, Miss Jamie Tipps. She is a classroom teacher. Yes. And she's going to give us more of her education journey here in a few minutes. But we asked her to bring a funny story because we know all educators have like this endless vault of things that have happened. Sometimes funny, sometimes embarrassing. I've told a couple embarrassing ones on myself. Sometimes mortifying. It kind of runs the gamut. So tell us a story today. What's something that has happened in your education past?
Well, we all know how honest the littles are to a fault, right?
Yeah. So honest.
So honest. Love it. So the last one I can think of is I was helping a child tie her shoes. So I was bent down to tie her shoes. And she said, "Miss Tipps, you got a lot of white up there." I said, "Thank you. Time to make an appointment."
I mean, there's nothing like a little reminder, right? That it might be time.
It might be time.
Maybe it was 1 week too long.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I know. I hear you. You never know what they're going to say to you when they bend down. And I remember working with a kindergartner one time and I was trying to get her to do her letters and I was trying to do anything I could to keep her focused and she was not. And so she started like petting me a little bit. And I go, "No, Macy, like, let's look back. Let's look back at the letters." And she looked at me and she goes, "You're really sparkly." And I go, "Well, thank you, Macy. I appreciate that. And let's now get back to the letters again." Yes. So hard to keep them engaged and moving forward.
Yes. Gotta love them. That's
I know.
I love the littles.
Right? Me too. You never know what's going to come out of their mouths. But okay, so give us your background in education. How did you get to where you are sitting today?
Okay, so I have my degree in early childhood education because I knew that that's kind of the age range that I really wanted to stay with. I'm very passionate about those, developing all those early skills. So I started my teaching journey in 1998.
Uh-huh. I'm right there with you.
Back when the smart board was an overhead projector.
Brand new.
Oh, no.
I mean, I loved the overhead projector.
I do.
I still would probably choose an overhead projector if I could.
Yes. Those were the days. Uh-huh. And wheeling the cart in to put your VCR tape in.
Yes. The TV. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I taught from 1998 till about 2003 when I had my second child. Okay. And I was just very, very blessed to be able to stay home with my kids.
Yeah.
I really thought I'd be back in the classroom a lot earlier, but the babies just kept coming.
Yes, that happens.
So I was out for 15 years. I did some long-term subbing kind of right in the middle of my kids. But I fully wasn't able to come back to the classroom until 2019. So, I started back, teaching kindergarten at, Derby Ridge. Mm-hmm. Actually, I started as an intervention. I did do classroom aid for a year.
Yes, I knew there were some other things you were doing as you were transitioning.
Yes, I decided to get my feet wet and just be a classroom aid for a year. And so the next year I was hired as a reading intervention teacher. Okay. And I ended up having to take over a kindergarten class.
That's right. Yeah. I remember when that happened.
I did kindergarten. Then I did online kindergarten.
I was going to say, so you arrived like right before the whole world shut down.
Yes. Ugh. Yes. It was a great time.
Yeah.
It ended up working out really, really well because my father was sick, that year and I didn't know what I was going to do. I had to move him, live with us. And so and it ended up that they offered the online and I was like, oh my gosh, this is perfect.
That's perfect. Yeah.
So, I had no idea how I was going to teach kindergartners online. No idea.
None of us did.
but it ended up working out, really well, and was successful. My kids were just as successful as they would have been in the classroom because I implemented a lot of SOR strategies year.
Yeah.
And this last year I was at Paxton Keeley teaching first grade. So I went back to get my master's. So I'm right in the middle of my master's in reading, of course.
Yes.
So just going to continue down that path.
Yeah. Great. So we do a lot of talking about science of reading, on this podcast. It is near and dear to my heart. I've, been in this world since 2005 and I've never strayed. Like, you know, the work that I was doing in 2005, like I was training letters at that point. Letters was happening. We were doing dibbles on the Palm Pilot. You remember a Palm Pilot?
I had never heard
that. Was like
that
brand new technology at the time. Yeah. And so we were scoring our dibbles on the Palm Pilot and we had to like, you know, hook it up to, God, Blake's going to make fun of me. Like, I don't know, an Ethernet? Is that?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. And so then it had a little sync station and it would talk to whatever system far away. I think it was M class. And, and then it would sync your data and it would come back and it would have all this stuff. And it was revolutionary, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, to not use paper and pencil for assessment was brand new. And so the work that we were doing in 2005 is, thank goodness, now the work that's kind of coming back to the mm-hmm. forefront now, it was, and it's, you know, it was the right path then, it's the right path now. So I'm always thrilled to hear that teachers are diving back into the work and really doing all the pieces that, help us know that children are on the right track with right. their reading.
Right.
So what kinds of things have you done? I know you came to our conference, right?
Yes.
Yes. So we had the Science of Reading conference a few months ago, which was amazing. What other kinds of things have you done as a teacher to kind of keep your learning moving forward with science of reading work?
So I'll just kind of go back to a little bit about when I taught online.
Yes, perfect.
I'm going to go back to that.
Yeah.
Because that's when I started my journey with mm-hmm. SOR.
Gotcha.
I was at a loss because at that time, we didn't really have a lot of direction as far as even a curriculum to teach that year. We were given what they had, which we quickly, and the district agreed as well, is that it was just not what we thought it was going to be.
Right.
So we were kind of left to our own devices mm-hmm. to teach what, you know, little pieces of this and little pieces of that. And so I somehow stumbled upon this science of reading and how the brain learns to read. I don't even remember where I first saw it, but I was just intrigued.
There was a lot, there started to be a lot of press about it,
right?
So Emily Hanford was, she had started writing. I want to say her first article came out in 2018, maybe, mm-hmm. Hard Words. And so once that caught fire, really, she helped, I think, get the grassroots movement going.
Right. And so I just dove into it and learned as much as I could possibly learn on my own.
Yeah.
And so I started implementing strategies that year. And I think that that is the only reason that my kids were as successful as they were that year. I ended up sending home, you know, orthographic mapping, the sound boxes, the Elkhonon boxes, with my students that year. And so I had my document camera and I sent home, I told the parents, you know, use pennies, use whatever, you know? So we did a lot of orthographic mapping. I sent home books, I sent home decodables.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, this was just all on my own. This was, I grabbed from wherever I could and, they would do those monthly pickups where they would pick things
up.
Yes,
I remember.
Remember that?
The drive-thrus.
Yes, and so my pickups were probably, my packets were a lot bigger than everybody else's.
I love it.
We did just a lot of that. We did a lot of building words, just like we did on the magnetic boards at school.
Right.
I just made sure that they had all those materials because I knew that they were going to have to stay active online one way or another. They just could not listen to me teach or even look at a screen and learn like they had to be doing. And so I started implementing those strategies back when I did online school. So then the next year, going back into the classroom again, I, you know, just continued those strategies, the orthographic mapping, the use of decodables. There's so many things that I do because I embed phonics instruction in my entire day.
Yes.
I don't just teach it in isolation.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, I do it during my morning message every day. My kids interact with it. We find the patterns. Mm-hmm. We circle them. and so I make sure that that is just part of our entire day, whatever we're working with. So I nixed the leveled readers that year, started working with Decodables, and just saw a lot of success. And this was in a, you know, a school where a lot of kids
came. There's a lot of need.
Well, there's a lot of need anyways without the COVID.
For sure.
And so that was even more of a challenge because these kids were coming from no preschool. Most of them were coming from no preschool at all. So I was starting at, you know, ground level. So, and it was, you know, I felt like my kids were on the right path by the time they left me. So they were reading. They had very strong phonics knowledge when they left my class. And then this year, lots and lots of things. Just because you keep building, right?
I know, right? Absolutely.
And you keep learning and you keep researching. And so I and that's the type of teacher that I am, is I am always I do that in my free time. Like leave your work
at school,
but I can't.
Gosh, I do too. I know. My friends and my husband yell at me. It's hard to turn your brain off. For me it is. I'm more comfortable when I'm working, which sounds insane, but I don't idle very well.
I don't either. But like that was my source of relaxation, is I would go in my room and I just get on my computer and I'm researching. What else can I do? What else can I start doing?
Familiar.
You know? Yeah. So, so this year, kind of one of the things I really wanted to focus on was that oral reading piece.
Yes. Yeah.
And how important that is, and kind of how we got away from the application of skills.
Right.
And I personally think that is probably the number one important thing for students.
Yes.
To become fluent readers.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we know the end goal is comprehension.
For
but, you know, like to get to that point, you have to be a skilled reader.
Yeah.
And so in order to be a skilled reader, you need to be able to have that automaticity of word reading.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, all it's building. It's, you know, that bottom up kind of thing. And so that oral reading piece that I implemented this year, and I was really, really heavy this year, was astounding.
So what did you do? Did you do repeated readings? Did you do, what'd your day look like when you were focusing on that part?
Okay. So, well, I mean, it starts with our morning message.
Right.
I mean, we just oral read a lot.
Right.
So, I mean, it would just start with simply that.
Right.
So one of the things that we would do is you'll do your phonics instruction, right? You'll do that 30, 45 minute lesson. But then, you know, when you carry over into your group time, I mean, that's where those decodables come in, and why they're so important is because anybody that's learning a new skill, you have to practice to get better. Like I love analogies. And so my analogy is, you know, you can go to piano lessons all day long, but if you don't practice, you're not going to become a good piano player, right?
Correct.
Right.
You can't just go to practice once a week.
Yeah. You can't just go to practice once a week. So, and it, and it's the same for reading, learning to read is a skill, you know, it's not natural. And we've learned that through the research is, it's a skill, and we have to build those neural pathways in the brain. And so in order to do that, you just have to, you know, repeated
repetition.
And so one of the ways in which I did that is, I mean, we oral read as a class in any opportunity, whether it was poems, the morning message, the foundation story of the week. So lots of oral reading practice that could be choral reading.
Choral,
it could be me modeling, just a few sentences, and then them and repeating those sentences. I mean, echo reading. Like, I mean, there's like so many ways. They go read the story with a partner. Just that repeated reading. Just they need to read orally. And we know that silent reading doesn't do anything.
Well, they can fake their way through that pretty well.
Oh, yeah. That's, they can look like good readers.
Oh, absolutely.
But they're not getting that feedback either.
Right.
And so that feedback from somebody, an adult in particular, is very, very important. So the use of decodables, and that is where that application of skills comes in your small group. But not only that, there were a lot of other things that I did that I'll talk about too. But I like to remember, I think Wiley Blevins was the one that said application is where it sticks.
I would agree with that.
So, so we do lots of, strategies, and I do lots of strategies in my small group, lessons with the decodables, and not just, we're just, you know, going through the text, but I also, you know, practice that fluency and that prosody with like, I do the thing where we do read it. I talk about what a robot reader. We call them robot readers in my class. And so I'm like, does that sound
Right.
Do you want to hear somebody read to you like that?
Right.
You know, and they're like, right. No. Right. And like, they really get into it. And so then I'll model and I'll be like, which one sounds better? You know, we talk about that a lot. And so after we robot read the text, which is, you know, the first time we read it, that's what's going to happen. Then I model for them what it should sound like. I also make sure that when I'm doing small groups that we point out all of the punctuation.
Oh my gosh, the punctuation. Yes. They have to read for punctuation or they'll never get to comprehension.
Right.
Yeah.
So we identify where are the quotation marks, where's their question mark, where's their exclamation point. And so, and how is that going to sound? And so we'll talk about how that sentence is going to sound, you know, as if somebody's speaking or, you know, they're excited or they're mad or whatever. So, I make sure that I point that out and then we reread it again. So just reading, to get through the text, to identify those patterns, and rereading for fluency, and then them going and practicing it on either with a partner or on their own again. So repeated readings is, you know,
One it's very strong. The research is very strong on repeated reading. So if you, you know, there's probably some new teachers out there that are listening to this and thinking about perhaps what their year in literacy might look like. So what does your day look like down to like the minutes and what resources you're using? So the first, you do your morning message. That's how much of your day?
Well, I kind of take a long time with my morning message. And I will tell you that
you can get a lot in a morning message.
You can get a lot in. We get a lot in my morning message. And that's why I still do it on chart paper. I go through a lot of chart paper. But I feel like the kids need to interact with that. They need to be able to come up and use the marker and circle things. So it sometimes takes me 15, 20 minutes on my morning message, but that's just part of our day. And like you said, the skills that my kids have learned, because I don't only work with the skills that we've been working on in class in our curriculum. I did implement secret stories again this year.
I hear a lot of people talking about that. How did you use that?
So, so I did put the stories up and I'd introduced, you know, one every, I wouldn't say one a week, but I introduced them gradually. And so, and then what we do is anytime we see that pattern, we point it out. And so I would make sure in my morning message to include that pattern. And so what my kids would do is once we knew enough of the secrets, like they were pointing them out and I didn't even ask them. I'd be like, what do you see in this? What do you see in this morning message? Show me what you see. And they'd be like, I see a R control vowel and they'd come up and circle it. And, you know, I see a vowel team. And so they would come up and circle it. And so every single day, just over and over and over again of them talking about those patterns. They knew it by the end of the year. They knew all those patterns by the end of the year. And those were second grade skills. So like, I hope they
won't. That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. They're not bored next year.
You just keep them moving forward, right?
Yes. Keep moving forward. And so I didn't feel like that was hurting them at all.
Oh,
like, like, oh, you're going too fast or, you know, they're not ready for those patterns. Of course they are. As long as they have repeated exposure to them.
Right.
And they're seeing those in words and noticing them. You got to give them, you know, more credit.
Right. And I know you're watching their assessment anyway. So if your assessment's saying that they know it, then, you know, keep them moving forward in that scope and sequence. So after you do your morning message, then do you go into phonological?
So yes, I do Hegarty, every morning. And I think, and I love Hegarty. It's wonderful. But one thing that I kind of, and this is where like foundations and the Wilson's theory is a little bit different than Hegarty.
It's
a little bit different in that they believe and the research is kind of showing that that phonological awareness with print is a little more effective.
I would agree. And I think that's really like, this is the point of why we say follow the research, right? The research is always going to tell us new things as it should. You know, I, when I'm talking to teachers, they're like, well, we learned this and we were told this. And I said, well, if a doctor was told this and never changed practice, would you want to go to that doctor? Like, you, things are going to change and evolve. We're going to learn new things. And then we just shape what we know around what we're doing, you know? So maybe we don't need as much as we once thought we did. You know, when I started out, the rule of thumb was, for phonological, a child in preschool, kindergarten needed about 20 hours of phonological. And that was kind of our, for an average child moving at the pace of an average student, then 20 hours was pretty good. And you had that pretty solidified. So if you were doing that all through, if they had a really strong preschool program and they had some kindergarten, they got that, you know, and then they were ready to move on. And that individual phoneme level was where they really had to concentrate and work to be able mm-hmm. to get the words off the page. So I think we're seeing that kind of come back around. And so teachers that use Hegarty, maybe you don't need all of the pieces. You know, maybe your kids have some of that. Don't do it.
Right.
You know, just skip that part and keep them moving forward. So,
well, and that's where you have to, as a good educator, you have to use curriculum as a tool.
Yes.
And it's such a hard concept. And I know it's hard for districts because we need that fidelity piece. And especially with people when they that move are either around. New to the district or just new teachers in general.
Yeah.
I mean, new teachers, they're going to follow it, you know, pretty close. Yes. And so you don't evolve. It just takes years of experience as a teacher, but
it does.
You know, that's where some coaching can come in.
Coaching is very important.
And so, so I can't tell a first year teacher, well, just for sure. look at the curriculum, but do something different. That's really hard to say.
It is.
But
because you need their knowledge to be deep, right?
Right.
So yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So,
So when I did Hegarty, I had so many learners that not so many. Most of them did fine.
Yes.
But then you have those kids who just couldn't grasp it. And so they needed me on the whiteboard. I would show them.
Yes.
I would erase that first letter and show, okay, now what's left. And so I put it to print.
Right.
Because especially if it was a new skill that we were doing. Yes. So like a substitution or something like that.
More
so
concrete.
I always, if it was a new skill or a more difficult skill, I always showed them with print. So that was kind of something that I did with Hegarty.
Yeah.
So after our morning message and our Hegarty lesson, I'm sorry,
I'm falling asleep. Totally.
So then we are like the way that our grade level decided to structure is that, to do the stations then.
Okay.
So that was when we did our, literacy stations.
So you moved more into small group.
Yes, because that's when the RTI time was.
Yes.
So I couldn't do, I would have preferred to go into foundations. Yeah.
But smart, because then the kids are getting small group no matter what. So they're not being pulled out for intervention.
Right.
They're not losing anything. They're just getting more adult time. So that was the right thing to do in the structure that.
Yeah. So we did our literacy stations then, and I could go into that for, I actually did a training on it last year of meaningful literacy stations.
Yeah.
Because I think we get into some time wasting or just not the best use of time, I guess.
And they're tricky. They're tricky. Mm-hmm. If you don't teach them well and the kids don't know what to do and then you get into classroom management, that can be scary, I think, for teachers.
Yeah. And that, again, that's where coaching comes in.
For sure.
And either years of practice or, you know, trial and error, which is what I was left to, trial and error.
Yeah.
But I really, you know, that's just a really strong point for me because I've brought those SRR strategies into my stations.
Awesome.
And I'm very particular that my kids, they're either practicing or applying skills when they're in stations. So that's just precious time.
It is.
And even a 15-minute block, I just, I don't want my kids not doing, you know, practicing or applying skills in some way.
I would agree.
So, so I have opinions about read to self.
Yes, so. I know. Me too.
So I did, and that was another spot in where I brought in oral reading.
Yeah.
Practice. And so I know a lot of teachers do read partner reading.
Uh-huh.
I kind of shied away from partner reading as a as one of my stations because number one, if you do it too often, they're just going to play around. It's not going to be exciting. It's not going to be something that because they're doing it every single day.
Right.
And so I just felt like it became more ineffective.
Right.
So I use partner reading, you know, just here and there, sprinkle it throughout my classroom. It's a big deal when they get to do it.
Sure.
You know? I don't do read to self very rarely because like you say, are they reading?
Yeah.
But my read, I would say read to self, they read to their iPads.
Oh, yeah.
So my kids, when they're doing their read to self is they have to be oral reading into their iPads. And so.
Oh, so then you can also hear them.
I can hear them.
Cool.
Yes. Yeah. And so this year I set up activities on Seesaw.
Okay.
And they loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, and so they'd be laying around my room. And so it's, my room isn't quiet during stations.
No. Nope.
But it's.
I don't know how it can be.
Well, and it's not chaotic.
Sure.
And it's not, I didn't have the behaviors because my kids were so engaged.
They were engaged, yeah.
They were so engaged. And so you'd hear the sounding out because my kids were working on writing. You could hear them sounding out words.
Right.
Or they were oral reading, so you could hear them and things like that. So, but it wasn't chaotic or anything like that. But, I mean, there was definitely, you know, but it was learning going on, right?
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, being able to read into that iPad was really well.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of sad because I think Seesaw is going away this year. And that was a way that parents could also hear their kids read.
I know that was used a lot during COVID. Mm-hmm. I remember my own child doing it for class and it was helpful. And I think he enjoyed it too. It wasn't, it was an engaging activity for them to do. It was easy for them to utilize, easy for the teacher to utilize. Mm-hmm. So I'm all about tools that are inexpensive and easy for everyone to do. Right. I think that's when you get implementation. It's too hard. Nobody's going to do it.
Right. Right.
So yeah.
Yeah.
So you do the stations, you're running your small groups.
Yep. I'm running my school.
And then after that is done, what does the next part of your day look like?
So, I want to say, for a minute. I think foundations was next.
Okay.
I think there's recess and lunch kind of.
Oh yes, I know all of the days. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
but a break after that would be appropriate. So that's smart.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, so we would do our stations from, let me think that it was probably from supposed to be from like 8:50 to like 9:50.
Yeah.
So we would do that. And then, we implemented foundations. Mm-hmm. And so that was another 45 minutes.
Right.
So 30 to 45 minutes.
Right.
And, you know, I did foundations with the way I was supposed to, sort of.
Sure. Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, they would tell you to adapt it too, to the kids,
right.
You know?
And I love foundations. I think it's probably one of the best, phonics curriculums out there. Mm-hmm. I think it needs a little tweaking. I don't think it's been tweaked in a while.
Yeah.
Cause there's a few things in there that, kind of don't follow the research, but, but other than that, I think it's really strong.
Mm-hmm.
It's really explicit. Mm-hmm. It's systematic. Some people complain that it goes too slow.
Sure.
You know, but
I think
that's,
you just
again,
adjust
where you
that.
Have to adjust.
Yes. You have
you
to
know?
Adjust.
You just have to adjust. If you're like, okay, we've done this to death. We're beating a dead horse.
Correct.
Like move
Stop
on.
Doing it. Yeah, I know.
So,
sometimes people need permission to feel like they can do that, you know?
Right.
So if they've got all the A Apple as, then stop doing that. You
right.
know, like just move on past that and get into the word building. Great.
Right, right.
But yeah, it can be tricky to know when to move on. And, you know, they also have to think about the majority, or if the majority of them have it, then, you know, move on and push the other into small group, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So knowing how to do all of that either takes a coach or it takes a lot of time and working through how it works best for you.
Right. Yeah. And you have to really notice what's going on with your students. You can't, it's hard to be up there teaching, but also like being monitoring what everybody's doing. Right. And so that's a skill that we have to just kind of perfect.
It is.
Like we have to know what's going on out there. Is your kid over there? If you have a kid over there, that's just not getting it at all.
I personally
as a teacher can't, like, I notice it. It's it's like even that mom vibe that you get, like you know
that one needs help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, some of the things that I did during foundations, is I went ahead and implemented those sound boxes.
Oh, yes.
I call them sound boxes,
yes.
But the
Elkhonen
boxes.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's
yeah.
not in our curriculum, but
yes.
I felt like that was
a very
important piece.
Yeah.
And
the U-Fly pulls that in, which is interesting.
Too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So we worked with like whatever skill we were working on in foundations. I just included that orthographic mapping into at least one
moving.
Of my days.
Yeah.
So maybe we didn't do whiteboards that day and instead we did Elkhonen boxes.
Yeah.
So that was really important. And I mean, it works.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
Another thing that I did is I didn't teach I don't teach sight words.
Oh yes.
So
yeah.
I implemented the heart words.
The heart words. Yeah.
And so I did that, instead of the, you know, just like a repeated.
Just memorization
of it. So, I mean, my kids, even my low kids that were struggling. I mean, they had probably 35 out of 50
sight
words.
That's awesome. That's so great.
Because of that. I mean, and I think if I had not used that, it would have been a lot more like they may have had 10 or 15 words out of the 50 that I taught.
Right. Just making sense of the words.
Making sense of the words.
Yeah. And I love, you can Google heart words and get all of them, which is great. So, I mean, I think it's a resource linked on UFly too, but it's easily accessible to people, you know? Which is a great resource out there. Yeah.
And one of the things that, what the research shows is that the way that we read as adults, we have, I think, what is it, like 30,000 sight words?
Probably. I haven't read it recently, but
I want to say it's that the average adult has about 30 sight words. And so what is a sight word? It's just any word.
It's
that
a word you know.
Sight. But the research shows that we actually do process every piece of every letter. So every phoneme, every grapheme. And so in like milliseconds.
Yes.
And so that's why like that is so important for like that. Those high frequency words is that you need to process all of the letters now, and you need to know the ones that aren't making the sounds they're supposed to, or why they're making, you know, this other sound.
Right.
And when we want to get kids to the point where that where words become sight words, is we have to teach them all of those patterns, and we have to have repeated exposure and practice for those words to become automatic.
Yeah.
And so that is why oral reading and fluency is so important.
So important. So important. Mm-hmm. I know I love to throw up a big word if I'm working with teachers to illustrate the point of we will always default back to decoding. So if you throw up some big word that they've never seen and it's not a sight word, your brain will automatically break that word down. Mm-hmm. And so having that understanding as an adult, you're like, oh, well, a lot of words a kid doesn't know. So they have to be able to do that. Right. And so just remembering what that feels like if you don't know how to say a word, I think is an important practice or activity for a group of adults to do, to have that feeling again. It's hard to remember.
Yeah.
We've been reading for a long time.
Yeah.
It is an automatic skill for us.
Right.
And so trying to remember what that might feel like as a kid is something that we have to do. So, yeah. So you've done your whole morning and you've gone in. Now, is there a piece where you're working with comprehension, vocabulary? Do you do that kind of work in a whole group kind of setting?
Yeah, I think for the littles especially, that is, I mean, that's where they're going to get those comprehension skills. And you can still do those with decodables.
I was
going to
say, not that you don't do them in the other parts of your day too. don't hear me say that. But
I can look at a decodable and pull out, you know, those comprehension skills and that vocabulary.
Yeah.
I found some really good ones on the Education to the Core.
Actually,
I have their premium membership. Their decodables, they use some very different words.
So
that's what I like about those decodables is because I can pull in that vocabulary piece with those and making inferences.
Yes.
So you can do it.
You can.
It's not, you know, it's not impossible.
Yeah.
So, but those other comprehension skills, you know, focusing on probably more in depth than inferences and vocabulary instruction and
all the standards
that we, you know, what context clues, character, you know, characters, all of those things. To me, those read alouds is where that needs to be. It's where it needs to happen. Yeah. Kids love stories.
They do.
And they need to see me modeling my thought process as I'm reading those stories. They need that questioning to be able to think more deeply about those texts. And so I just feel like, and there's some very wonderful, rich literature out there to use.
Yeah, there is.
That kids enjoy. Yes. So there's just so many. There's just so many. And so let's use those in read-alouds, right?
Get them in. And that's the love of reading, you know, like it doesn't, you know, sometimes people misconstrue science of reading being all about phonics. It's not. I mean, it's about being intentional in your teaching. It's about using what we know works best for kids and having some direct instruction, you know? Yep. So there's lots of pieces that go into that, but I don't think any person who knows science of reading well would ever say it's only all about phonics. Well,
I don't know if you read that Ed report that just came out the other day. Every report that comes out that's kind of leaning away from science of reading.
Yeah. Tries to
assumes
use that
we're all phonics.
I know. We have to be better about saying that. No, that's not what we mean.
That's not. Yeah.
It is a very important part. And you can't ignore it because kids have to be able to say the words, but it's not everything.
I know. Yeah. And we've never said that.
We've
never said that. And it reminds me so funny. I don't know if you've seen the movie Joe versus the Volcano ever.
Oh gosh. Long time ago.
So there's a character on there and he's on this phone call with a customer.
Yeah.
Right. And he just repeats over and over again, "I am not arguing that with you. I am not arguing that with you." And he just says, that's kind of where we are.
Yeah. I know. I'm so tired of arguing anything. Like, can we all just do what's best for kids? Like, and they're all going to have different needs. So let's try the best we can to meet them where they are.
And I think, you know, focusing on those littles again, that K through two and the importance of teaching kids to read is that like, we don't have to do everything.
No,
like they're going to, like, comprehension is going to come, and it builds every year. They have their entire elementary experience.
Entire life. We never stop comprehending. We never stop.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So to work on inferences, to work on character traits, all of that. Like, they've got the rest of their, like, we don't
I know.
Let's get them ready.
I know. I know. Just get them reading.
Yeah, get them reading.
Thank you so much. This has been so great.
Yeah.
Yes.
I could talk for hours.
I know, right? So could I. I know.
And it's funny because I'm like, who wants to listen to me? Nobody wants to listen to me talk about reading.
I
do. So
I would just talk all day with you. Yeah. So maybe you can come back and tell us more things that you're doing this year that are working. Mm-hmm. I like to hear about the implementation piece because we can talk all day about what should be happening or what programs are out there, but it all comes down to implementation.
It does.
And so having some more stories about what's working well in classrooms are things people want to hear.
Yeah. My biggest advice for teachers is that oral reading.
Yeah.
Please
figure out a way to
get
do
them oral reading.
Yeah.
And they need it throughout the day.
Yeah.
I ended up assigning it for them to do at home.
Yeah.
And to do that, you have to send home materials.
Yes.
That was another thing a lot of teachers shy away from.
Yeah.
homework.
They're worried.
I guess the homework word.
Or worried it won't come back.
My parents loved it. They were so happy that I was just sending home something that their kids could read.
Yeah.
And it made them involved. It made my kids involved. And it was just more practice.
Right. Right. So if a teacher wanted to find you, for some advice or help, how can they find your, what's your email?
JTIPS@CPSK12.org.
Perfect. So if you were listening today and you thought, oh my gosh, I wonder what some of her centers are, or I wonder what she uses for small group, reach out and connect. I think that's the most powerful tool we have is to connect and learn with each other. So, so thanks. We'll have you back and we'll listen to how your year is going. All right.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.